live via satellite from Joe Robbie Stadium in Miami, the Album Network welcomes you to the world premiere broadcast of Pink Floyd's The Division Bell. Tonight's show is brought to you by Sony. Hear what you want to. And by 1-800-COLLECT, the way to save on collect calls. Good evening, North America. I'm Redbeard, and that unique sound you hear in the background is the return of Pink Floyd to the concert stage after a seven-year absence. The 63,000 Pink Floyd fans here in Miami are seeing, hearing, and we're feeling a stadium concert spectacular that is unparalleled in rock history. This is so cool, and it's all to herald the completion of the first Pink Floyd studio album since 1987's A Momentary Lapse of Reason. Coming up next, I'll bring you David Gilmour, Nick Mason, and Richard Wright of Pink Floyd with the world premiere of The Division Bell on the Album Network.
This.
Hello, I'm Richard Wright.
I'm Nick Mason.
And I'm David Gilmour of Pink Floyd, and you're listening to the world premiere broadcast of The Division Bell on the Album Network.
Thank you.
Cluster One, the instrumental which opens Pink Floyd's The Division Bell. I'm your host, Redbeard, and recently I spoke with David Gilmour, Nick Mason, and Richard Wright of Pink Floyd about their next Sonic painting in a gallery of masterpieces, including Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, and The Wall. I started by asking Pink Floyd's David Gilmour about the title of their newest, The Division Bell.
It comes from a line in a song, High Hopes, contains a line about the Division Bell.
What is a Division Bell?
The Division Bell is a bell that rings in Westminster, in the Houses of Parliament, and it also rings in the apartments of many of the members of Parliament, and it is a bell that rings to summon all the members of Parliament to go to the House of Commons and to divide into yeas and nays to vote on the issues, because often in debates in the Houses of Parliament, the members of Parliament are not necessarily all there. Some of them have already made up their minds about what they want to do or are just going to follow the party line. And so they may be sitting at home in an apartment. There's a sort of catchment area around the Houses of Parliament where, within a certain distance, where if you are a member of Parliament, they install this bell in your apartment. They get to the point where they finish debating, they ring this bell. Everyone that's in the area comes down. If you're all the Tories and all the Labour people, all come down to vote one way or the other. It's a division bell. It divides the yeses from the noes.
Pink Floyd drummer Nick Mason notes that even though it's been 7 years between Pink Floyd studio albums, the Division Bell has not necessarily been 7 years in the making.
It's very hard to get the thing started because there is an inevitability that it will be a long project. And that's a problem because it's difficult to start work. I'm sure we'd all agree we make records because we want to make records. It's not some contractual obligation. It's not something that at the end of the day that sort of has to be done. It's something that we want to do. But inevitably, you know, you're sort of lining up for spending the entire year working on this record. And no matter how much you would like to be able to do it in 2 months or 3 months, you know it's going to take a long time. So it's really useful to have someone there to help push it along a bit. I think the curious thing is that you can all sit around and talk about being radical or changing things or sort of trying to do things in a different way. But of course, the length of time you've been at it means that the tunnel narrows in a way that inevitably what appears radical to you after 20 years is in fact very narrow band compared to how you might have behaved 20 years before. So hindsight is an exact science. I don't think that I see particular continuity to our working life, if you like. I think it's interesting that there are records that sort of come that you could actually take groups of our recording history and say there's more continuity between, let's say Dark Side and The Wall than the albums between. And I think perhaps with the newest record, it goes back to perhaps Wish You Were Here or something like that. There are jumps. But, I mean, that's inevitable from having the same group of people working together for a long time.
Okay, let's talk about that. Is that an accident that the same group of people have worked together for this length of time? I mean, you've outlived marriages, you've watched kids grow up, you've watched walls being built and then being torn down almost in the lifetime of this band.
Yep, the whole of European history has sort of passed us by while we've been in the recording studio. New view of world order. The general rule of thumb is that the reason why a band stay together is because the sum is greater than the parts. That as long as the band feel, and all the members of the band feel, that they can achieve more together than they can on their own, there is a purpose to the band remaining together. And the reason why people leave bands is because they no longer believe that to be the case. And that's certainly the case of someone like Roger. He wanted to go and do it on his own. that's the more interesting thing is how is perhaps how bands actually get together in the first place, which does seem to be entirely a matter of luck.
The first peal of the Division Bell came in the form of an intriguing song with the simple title, Keep Talking. Even Pink Floyd's David Gilmour has heard it on the radio.
I heard it today for the first time. I heard my first thing I've heard from this record on the radio this morning. And it's always quite extraordinary when you hear one of your things that you've been working on for ages and you know what it means, you know everything about it, but the first time you hear it on the radio, you have got the added weight of knowing that there are millions of other people listening to it as well. So you get a completely different perspective on it.
It's also, for you, it's out of context, isn't it?
It's not so much the out of context. It's that you know that other people are listening, and it's their first listener. The thing is, every bit of it, you sort of gets invested with a different meaning, if you like. And it was really, really nice to hear that this morning on the radio and wonder how people would take to hearing this strange voice talking about for millions of years and stuff on the beginning of it. It's really, really... There are some aspects to making records and making music that you just never yourself get some of the things that are in the stuff you have done until you hear it yourself on the radio with the knowledge that millions of other people's and millions of other ears are listening at the same time. It's fascinating.
For millions of years, mankind lived just like the animals. Then something happened, which unleashed the power of our imagination. We learned to talk.
There's a silence surrounding me. I can't seem to think straight. I sit in the corner, and no one can bother me. I think I should speak now.
like this. All we need to do is make sure we keep talking.
Is that voice?
Well, it's not a real voice. It's the voice of Stephen Hawking, who is the professor who wrote this book called A Brief History of Time. It's a huge, huge popular book. He's suffering from motor neurone disease. He's in a wheelchair. He can't speak. And this is a voice synthesizer computer thing that has been built for him. I think he can only move one finger, a tiny, tiny little bit, and he works it all with that. I saw an advert on the television in England for a telephone company, and his voice was on this advertisement. And this advertisement nearly made me weep. I've never had that with a television advertisement for the commercial on the television. As I don't suppose you have. I think I know anyone else who's ever. But this is the most powerful piece of television advertising that I've ever seen in my life. And I thought it was fascinating. And I contacted the company that made it and asked if I could borrow the voice track from it, this voiceover track from it, which I did, which is this voice synthesizer thing. And I applied it to one of the pieces of music we already had. And I've fiddled around with it for months, changing it and putting, until it started making sense.
Now, was this your first awareness of Stephen Hawking?
Oh, no. I've known about him for years. He's incredibly well-known. You know, his book, A Brief History of Time, was all about black holes and stuff. It's one of the biggest selling sort of scientific type books ever. He's a very, very successful person, but he can't talk or move or anything.
Now, what do you know about him personally? How I mean, he is like preeminent scientist, is he not?
Hmm. He is, yeah. They got him to do this advert for a telephone company in England, and I don't think he even wrote the words that they used with him, but they used him in the advert. I mean, he was in it in his wheelchair. He looks kind of strange. And I just found it so moving that I felt that I had to try and do something with it or with him or something in some way. I suppose you could say that, there's a theme throughout the album which involves communication. And pretty much all the songs are connected to the theme of communication in some way or another.
Pink Floyd keyboardist Richard Wright was asked why their new album, The Division Bell, has an instantly recognizable, seamless Pink Floyd quality to it.
Partly because I was involved with it a lot more. And we made certain decisions. For example, Moments You Lapse at Reason, I was involved with it virtually near the sort of the last quarter of making the album and just putting in a couple of Hammond tracks down or whatever. This, Nick, myself and Dave, were involved right from the beginning in Britannia Row, just playing together. And out of that, the tracks came. And decisions like Nick will play all the drums, I will play all the keyboards, and John Caron came in as a programmer and played some of the keyboards. But it was to get the band feeling back. And for that reason, I think, as you say, the fans will like it more. I think we were kind of thinking of Wish You Were Here, which happens to be my favorite album.
Tell me what, in your opinion, makes that one special and any parallels that you see to The Division Bell.
Now, that's a specific question. It's hard to say. It just happens to be the album that, for me, just from the moment it starts till it finishes, it flows. The songs flow into each other, and it's just a wonderful feeling in it. The intention of this album was to try and recreate a band feeling, which hadn't happened on Moments You Lapse of Reason. I wasn't on Final Cut. I was on The Wall, but again, it wasn't a band thing. And we wanted both Dave and Nick, I can speak for them, I think, and myself, really liked the feeling we had on Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here.
The
That's called What Do You Want From Me? A song that bluntly re-examines the performer-audience relationship from the world premiere broadcast of Pink Floyd's The Division Bell. This album will be in your favorite music store next Tuesday. I'm Redbeard. We're live from opening night of Pink Floyd's massive North American tour at Joe Robbie Stadium in Miami. It's the first of 58 stadium concerts between now and July 18. While you were listening to the song Keep Talking a few minutes ago, Pink Floyd was actually performing it live here in Miami. Right now, they're taking a break at intermission. I want to tell you a little bit about this show that's going from coast to coast all over North America. It takes 200 crew people in 49 tractor-trailer trucks hauling, drum roll please, 1,400,000, thank you, 1,400,000 pounds of steel for the three stages that leapfrog across the country. If you think that's mind-boggling, you haven't heard anything yet. Throughout the night, we'll give you more details of the Pink Floyd tour. We'll tell you where you can still get tickets for this tour that's selling out everywhere. But coming up next, more from David Gilmour, Richard Wright, and Nick Mason, Pink Floyd, and the world premiere of the new album, The Division Bell, on the Album Network.
I'm Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're listening to the world premiere broadcast of The Division Bell on the Album Network.
I'm Redbeard. David Gilmour and I discussed the well-known acrimony that flared up publicly upon the release of 1987's A Momentary Lapse of Reason album, the first without original member Roger Waters.
Right upon release of Momentary Lapse, Roger had taken his vendetta from the courts to the press, okay, and he was lobbing verbal mortars at you publicly. You were, at that point, really kind of under a siege mentality, because the Momentary Lapse album and the tour had really, they weren't the documented success that we now know them to be. And the press was allowing itself to be manipulated into being the messenger boy. But 60 sold-out stadium shows later and 4 million Momentary Lapse albums later or more. When I saw you 9 months later at the conclusion of that tour, you were confident, you were jovial, you were self-satisfied.
Too self-satisfied, maybe.
Well,
maybe too self-satisfied.
Why do you say that? Isn't success the best revenge?
Yes. I mean, I don't know how interested I am in revenge. It's... You know, it was a long, painful process, which was trying to deprive me of my liberty to do what I wanted to do. And I don't really react terribly well to that. Lurching into the future, bearing the mantle of Pink Floyd without Roger in 1987 was a tough one. It's, as anyone can imagine, it's a big, tough mantle to stick on my poor shoulders and trudge forward into the future with.
I don't know if I've ever heard you verbalize it that way.
Well, it is. It's tough. And you're right to say that I was confident at the end and happy. Anyone would be happy and confident at the end when our moving forward and doing what we did, making the album, doing that tour, was justified. One can consider the merits of everyone's case in these things, but I don't think there's many people that wouldn't have thought at that point that we had every right to continue doing what we were doing.
We'll be right back.
I continued with Pink Floyd's Nick Mason. What was the toughest question of conscience, or the most difficult time for this band? The point at which you honestly had concerns for everything we know to be Pink Floyd and for its future?
I suppose for me, probably the making of the final cut was the most difficult. I think by then there was very much a feeling that we were really hardly a band anymore, that the sum was no longer greater than the parts, that we weren't achieving anything like our potential. But the thing became, I think it became a sort of an arena for all the problems of Roger feeling that really he wanted to either leave the band or run it his way. And the material became, it sort of drifted, actually. I think it probably drifted away from one idea and then became a sort of new concept and a new story. And that happened halfway through, and instead of perhaps ditching it, which is perhaps what we should have done, or rethinking it, we didn't even really have the sort of mechanism set up anymore as a band to be able to sort of sit and talk rationally about it. It would have simply been another opportunity for a fight.
Mm-hmm. You had stopped talking rather than keep talking, right? Yeah. At that time, in that moment, could you have imagined that in January 1993, that you and Rick and David would be creatively jamming together?
No, absolutely not. I think at the time I thought this was the... I suppose I saw that album as the beginning of the end. It's really easy to look back and really hard to look forward in terms of any sort of understanding of what we're up to. I mean, we were all absolutely brought up to believe that that rock music was some ephemeral activity that would last for a year or 2 years or a few years, and then one would get on and do something else, get a proper job and all that. And of course, it's not like that, but you have no idea. There is absolutely no guarantee that people will continue to buy the records or like the records, that you can suddenly be out of step with what people are interested in, what they want to hear. It could happen tomorrow. So... you have no sort of real game plan as to how the future will go. But at that time, certainly, I just thought, I can't really see how we can make the next record. Or if we can, it's a long time in the future. And it'll probably be more for just because of feeling of some obligation that we ought to do it rather than for an enthusiasm.
Yeah.
from the world premiere of their new album, The Division Bell. That's Pink Floyd with Coming Back to Life, preceded by Take It Back. I'm Redbeard. We're live from opening night of Pink Floyd's 58 concert North American tour in Miami. After a brief intermission, Pink Floyd has returned on the gargantuan stage to serenade the 63,000 fans with Shine On, You Crazy Diamond. And that saxophonist you hear right now, live from Miami with Pink Floyd, is the original saxophonist from the Dark Side of the Moon album, Dick Perry. We've even seen Stereo Pigs so far tonight at Pink Floyd's opening night, and here's how you can too. They have sold more than 2.75 million tickets to the 58 Stadium show so far. They've set sales in record-breaking numbers. 100,000 Pink Floyd concert tickets sold for two shows at New York's Yankee Stadium. They've had to add an additional show at the 57,000-seat Giants Stadium. 103,000 tickets sold. Two sold-out shows in Oakland. They've added a third Pink Floyd show there. 110,000 seats for two sold-out shows in Philadelphia, resulting in, you guessed it, a third show in Philly. 64,000 tickets in Pasadena, 68,000 in Cleveland, sold out, 75,000 Pink Floyd concert tickets in Columbus, Ohio, 108,000 Pink Floyd concert tickets, two shows in Toronto, and of course there are 63,000 Pink Floyd fans here at Joe Robbie Stadium, and it's sold out with more that wanted to get in. You are listening to the world premiere of The Division Bell, new from Pink Floyd, and we'll continue with David Gilmour, Richard Wright, and Nick Mason with more world premiere music from The Division Bell coming up next on the Album Network.
This
Hello, I'm David Gilmour of Pink Floyd, and you're listening to the world premiere broadcast of The Division Bell on the Album Network.
If one of your goals was to create an environment for the listener listening to The Division Bell, you've succeeded remarkably. It's kind of magic, really.
Well, that's what we're trying to create, simply magic. It's as simple as that. Try to create magic, try to move people, move their hearts a little bit. I have already had vast amounts of enjoyment out of this record myself. And I sit at home late at night and listen to it through in all the stages it's been through, just a collection of songs, collection of tracks without words, collection of tracks with words, with melodies, without melodies, all the way through. I get home from the studio and I listen through to the progress that we've made. And as soon as we had, you know, a collection of pieces, a few months ago we had a collection of pieces. I had a tape over an hour long with basically pretty much all the tracks on it. And I'd sit at home late at night after returning from the studio and listen to them. And I really have got off on it myself, enjoyed it so much. You then just keep honing away at it, working those things to try and make them even better, make them have more point, make them have more poignancy, if you like, more heart. And you can then only hope when you deliver it out that the pleasure that you've had will be shared by other people. I know nothing pleases everyone, but there will be people who will listen to this, who will derive the same sort of pleasure that I have out of it. And that is something that makes me feel very good about this particular record.
It should.
The trouble with making records, really, is that you do tend to finish the record and then go out and do a tour, and you're so busy playing the tour, playing all the songs and doing stuff, that you never listen to the record again. I mean, usually from the date of release of the record, that's about the last time I get to listen to the record for God knows how long, maybe a year or more. And then it's it can be very, very enjoyable, really good fun to actually not have listened to it for a long period of time and just sit at home, relax with a glass of wine, and
listened to the record for the first time for a long time, and yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. The end of this year, maybe.
Is it ever disconcerting to let it go from that special place where you've created it, you've lived with it intimately, you've been the birth mother for this project? Is there ever a point at which you've got to let it go? It's kind of like sending your child off to school for the first time?
It is like that, yes. You do have to let it go, and you always think there was more that you could have and should have done, and you always kind of want a little bit more time to get the thing finished to the perfection that you imagine. And you've everyone knows about records in the past. Neil Young, I remember once, put a record out, actually released it, then recorded it, and then remixed it and reworked it for months, and then put it out again, and then record it again, I think. I mean, you've all heard about these things. I wouldn't want to take it that far, but you always think there's a little bit more that you could have done.
That's Pink Floyd from The Division Bell with the achingly beautiful instrumental Marooned, with David Gilmour's plaintive guitar dipping and soaring like a solitary seagull. In talking with drummer Nick Mason, I pointed out that almost everything about Pink Floyd is exaggerated, from their album cover graphics to their legendary stadium concert extravaganzas, from anatomically correct giant flying pigs to this year's psychedelic blimp. Nick Mason recognizes that all of this makes them a huge success and a huge target.
You know, there are always people who are going to find what we do a sort of, I suppose you could almost say, unnatural, and it will never work for them because it in some ways goes against the rules of rock and roll.
That's
about how real rock music should be, which maybe it should be in a a bar somewhere, or it should be where you can see the sweat on everyone, or you have personalities, or whatever.
But I thought it was about also breaking rules, and that's just it. See, these are self-imposed rules, and the first thing, one of the things that we all love about Pink Floyd is that the first thing that goes is the rules, the boundaries that restrict thought and imagination. It's the first thing that you throw out.
Well, yes, but I mean, there are all sorts of rules, aren't there, that some are spoken, some are unspoken, and some are complete nonsense, but that we all sort of, we allow to sort of roll along.
That's a good word. We allow it.
There will always be people who feel that Pink Floyd finished when Roger left, just as there are people who feel Pink Floyd ended when Syd Barrett left. And you can't change that. For them, that is the case. And much as I would love to be able to sort of convince them otherwise, I understand that that's the case. There's also a sort of concept that bands have to be... people would like to believe that they are made up of a sort of groups of lovable mop-tops. It's the sort of... the Beatles as they were in 1967. That's really our sort of ideal view of a band. And of course, it's not true. This goes back to the elements that make up a band. Generally, there's an enormous amount of conflict and tension in a band. It's considered, when it's reported, it's considered to be scandal almost. But it's something that is allowed to drift on as a sort of concept of how rock music should be. But of course, it's a piece of complete nonsense.
Did you know it was all going to go so wrong for you? And did you see it was all going to be so right for me? Did we tell you then you were always the golden boy then, and that you'd never lose a light in your eyes? Hey, you, did you ever realize what you'd become? That it wasn't only me.
That song was called Poles Apart. It's another complex, thought-provoking song from the world premiere of Pink Floyd's The Division Bell. I'm Redbeard, live from Pink Floyd's opening night concert in Miami's Joe Robbie Stadium. Listen to the crowd singing along with David Gilmour. This is just fantastic. Opening night of Pink Floyd's world tour here at Joe Robbie Stadium in Miami. Several of the things that we have seen and experienced so far tonight. Mind-boggling lighting show, which you would expect from Pink Floyd. But something I don't think has ever been seen in any concert in history, and that is the use of gold lasers. Stop and think about it. Of all the concerts you've gone to, gold lasers, I guess, are so intense that they have been outlawed. They have like atom-splitting capability. So don't get too near the gold lasers when you see Pink Floyd this year on tour. We've seen that. We've seen the use of huge circular video screens, which is a Pink Floyd trademark. But never before seen videos being used in the show. And later, we expect to see the largest prop ever used in a rock concert anywhere on planet Earth. The Pink Floyd blimp is supposed to make its appearance. It's now been known, commissioned as the Division Bell. You remember the Memphis Bell plane? Well, this is the Division Bell. It was first suggested that this huge, psychedelically painted blimp should fly and float over the stage here at Joe Robbie Stadium during the encore, which will be Run Like Hell. But then someone noticed that the pyrotechnic explosions would shoot flames so high into the air that they would be blowing up their own blimp. So they've had a guy on a walkie-talkie for an hour now telling the blimp pilots, "Don't fly over the stage." This is just part of the wild extravaganza, the concert experience that's going on right now at Joe Robbie Stadium, opening night of Pink Floyd's North American tour. There are 57 more concerts that you can catch between now and July 18th. Somehow Pink Floyd has even orchestrated a light rain to fall into Joe Robbie Stadium, and it lends a totally electric capability to the lasers. As you hear Wish You Were Here in the background, we're going to take this short time out. When we come back, David Gilmour, Richard Wright, and Nick Mason will give you more of the world premiere of their new album, The Division Bell, on the Album Network.